on the brain. And anyway, we were doing Michigan Conference. He lives there in Michigan, so we get to get together every now and then. He's busy, I'm busy, but it's always a blessing when our paths cross. We were asked to do a camp meeting together, so he wanted me to do this one on discipline. So this was from a Michigan conference. And I said, you give it a title. He's really good at titles. I said, you give it a title and I'll present it. So he gave me a title and then I put this together for him. So discipline. Is discipline really a rule of love? I know when my mom used to tell me, I'm spanking you because I love you. I'm going to let you know I didn't feel very loved at that moment. Thought, oh, this is what love is. I don't think I want any part of it. But is this really a rule of love? Is discipline the rule of love? And what you see right here, I would not call these the rule of love. That man is actually scolding his little girl. Pulling a child's ear is never acceptable. Slapping a child on the face. And if you can look at the father spanking the child, what type of expression does the father have? He looks angry. This is called child abuse to me. This is not love. So I think there's a right way and a wrong way to discipline our children. First, we have to change our views of it. People see discipline as, in my mind, their world, discipline as pain, grounding, ignoring, timeout, threatening, isolation, scolding, yelling, privileges taking away, commanding, or forcing. In my mind, these are more like worldly views, I think, than biblical principles. So I wanted to raise my children with these biblical principles. Also, I did not find these redemptive. I wanted to know anything I did, will my child's heart surrender using these? And honestly, I don't see it. If yours do, share what you have, because I have not seen them to work that way. Spanking parents use for punishment when they are angry, frustrated, irritated, exasperated, and fed up. And spanking is the easiest form to go to. And so when I'm actually working with families, if that's all they've done is spankings, I ask that they take them out for about a month and find some other creative ways to discipline until they have found out there's other ways to discipline, and then let's go in the right use, which I'll be looking at now. What is the right use? Because you have to deal with rebellion. Rebellion does come up, so you have to deal with it. But there's a wrong way and a right way. How can an angry person bring redemption to another angry person? Sin is sin, and sin does not change a person. You need a surrendered heart to work with a sinful heart. So the purpose was to cause pain, sorrow, submission, or break the will. This purpose seemed to be more focused on compliance, not surrendered will. The results from spanking, more rebellion, more anger, hitting back, outward, obedience, or compliance. God wants a surrendered heart. Spankings will never accomplish that. Spankings are not redemptive in my mind. So is this the rule of love? These are parents that have taught children that avoid harsh discipline, and they have swung to the opposite side where they have no discipline at all or very little. This boy has become a bully because somewhere in his life he has realized he could treat people such a way. I don't know when it started, but no child's bad behavior starts overnight. It starts and it builds. And if you don't correct it, it gets worse and worse. But it never starts just overnight to this degree. Here's a child throwing a temper tantrum. And this little boy with that fist. Did you ever see that? This came from YouTube, looking for pictures. That is so true, so defiant there. And this boy here on the far right, it says killer on his shirt. I don't think he's more than 17 years old. He was arrested for killing somebody. You can see how proud he is of what he's done. This is not redemptive discipline either. So to go totally justice-minded is bad. To go totally mercy is bad too. There's a road where justice and mercy meets, and it's at the cross, and that's where we need to take our children, to that cross, to teach them. So we don't want children to be this defiant. I know just recently I was working with the family, and the child was very disrespectful to the mother. And I asked the father, when did you allow your son to talk to your wife that way? That should have never been allowed to have a child speak to his mother that way. My children would have never thought to speak to me disrespectfully. And in my home, my father took care of it too. You don't talk to your mother disrespectfully. So somehow we're allowing it to happen, and it grows. So we have discipline, punishment, and spankings. There has to be a truth, because Satan can only counterfeit what God has in truth. So whenever you see a counterfeit, like God, the stars, the zodiac, horoscopes, there's got to be truth somewhere in there, because Satan can only counterfeit truth. And there is. There's a book out there called God's Voice in the Stars. God named the stars. The whole plan of salvation is in the stars. So you can study that plan of salvation. So Satan only has counterfeits. He doesn't have truth. So what is the truth? Instead of, let me go back, discipline, we disciple our children. It's the foundation. It's our teaching that we're going to be giving them. So the discipline is to disciple our children to be like Christ. Punishment, instead, teach standards and consequences. And we'll look more into that. We did a little bit on Friday, but we're going to look at the positive and negative. Instead of spankings, God uses the what he calls the rod of correction. It's used very, very differently, and it's for a whole different purpose. And we'll look into that, too. These are God's chosen methods to bring salvation to our children. Parents, you can lose your children by wrong or no methods of discipline. These methods show the character of Jesus. God's character is twofold. Justice and judgment are the habitation of thy throne. Mercy and truth shall go before thy face. Psalms 89:14. Through Jesus, God's mercy was manifested to men, but mercy does not set aside justice. God's love has been expressed in his justice no less than in his mercy. Justice is the foundation of his throne and the fruit of his love. By his life and his death, Christ proved that God's justice did not destroy his mercy, but that sin could be forgiven and that the law is righteous and can be perfectly obeyed. Desire of Ages 761 through 2. Justice and mercy cannot be separated from our child training. Together they reveal the character of God. Justice, when our child's training only shows the justice side of God, void of God's mercy, a child grows up fearing God and wanting nothing to do with him. If we only have mercy and we have void of God's justice, a child grows up believing he can do whatever he wants and never experience the justice of God's law. So only the cross reveals the true justice and mercy of Jesus. And it's what we have to bring into our child training, where our children are seeing justice and mercy. So the rule of love, we know that harsh discipline is not of the Lord, neither is no discipline. True discipline is the rule of love. It shows God's justice and his mercy. The cross needs to be the focal point. This one, the father sitting down talking to his son. The second one, I don't know what transpired before this, but this is what it would look like after a discipline that we went through. We would hug together and pray together. The little girl, you can see she's looking up intently at the father. He must be explaining something. And the mother is down here talking to her son. There's times you have to reprove your children, but you can do it in the fear and love of the Lord or in self. Battle for your child's heart. The battle is not between you and your child. You are on the same side. The battle is with Satan. So like I said, we're not going this way against each other. We have to get on the same side and walk with our children. And I keep telling you that. We're walking together, teaching our children how to be righteous. We're helping them in this battle as they go forward. And I know when I first started my child training, I'm a very justice-minded person. And when my children would do something bad, it was like, how dare you go against my wishes? I'd be so angry with them. And then I realized that I was stepping into this battle, and now the battle was becoming between me and my child rather than against the enemy. And God had to tell me, get out of that ground. You're on this side, and we're going against him. So that is not the battle. Satan is trying to take the heart of my child, and I need to get on the same side with them. Remember the story that we talked about Danny in the battle. He would say no to that natural heart and yes to Jesus and no to that natural heart and yes to Jesus. He was learning how to battle that natural heart that he could feel. He knew not to listen to it, to get on the side of Jesus and to walk with Jesus. And so that's what we want, is our children to walk with Jesus. The battle is not against the child. The child can recognize, help the child recognize the natural heart, say no to it, yes to the Lord. I think it's just flipped through one. Some parents allow Satan to control their children, and their children are not restrained, but are allowed to have wicked tempers, to be passionate, selfish, disobedient. Should they die, these children would not be taken to heaven. The parents' course of action is determining the future welfare of their children. Kind of a heavy statement, isn't it? If they allow them to be disobedient and passionate, they're allowing Satan to take them in charge and work through them as shall please his satanic majesty. And these children, never educated to obedience and to lovely traits of character, will not be taken to heaven, for the same temper and disposition would be revealed in them. That's pretty strong, isn't it? So the battle for your child's heart, when God calls you to battle, do not turn from the battle, allowing the child to battle alone. Temper tantrums, as I said earlier, is your child not being under the Lord's will. So you want to make sure you're helping them. I already showed you how to do the Indian hold, and that was when you were with me. I don't know if that was last night. But anyway, I showed you how to do an Indian hold. If you weren't here, I'll go through that again. But you're going to try to get that child to where they're not battling with self. You've got to get them under the control of Jesus. So you're trying to stop the temper tantrum. Do not let a spouse take the battle. I have seen so many times where the father just doesn't know what to do and hands the child over to the mother, or the mother's had enough and hands the child to the father. The children have to know both of you are on the same page. One of you may have to take the battle because you've been battling too long and you just need a reinforcement. But your battling needs to be the same, because I've seen some where one parent's stronger than the other, and that the child is learning different things in the home. It teaches the child that obedience is a preference, not a command. And I learned this at a very early age. My parents would not come together and make decisions when I asked to do something. They would not make that decision. So I knew that. So I would go to my dad and say, I'd like to do this. And he'd say, well, what did your mom say? And I say, well, she said I could. And then I go to my mom and I tell her what I wanted to do. She said, well, what did your dad say? Go talk to your dad. And I said, I did. What did he say? He said, I could. And then it wasn't until that night they got together and realized they didn't. Neither one of them agreed that I could go. But by that time, I had already gone. So I learned how to play it. Once they realized I was playing this game, when I asked, they said, well, I'll talk to your mother about it, or I'll talk to your father about it, and I'll get back with you. And then I realized there was just no hope. You know, they had found my trick, and so they were talking about it with each other. So it teaches your child, if one says, and if one does a lot of discipline and the other one doesn't discipline in something, is saying that it's really not a standard in this home. It's a preference. Dad prefers not to have it done. Mom prefers to have it done. I'll do whatever Dad wants because Dad doesn't require as much of me. And it's really hard, those of you that are in single-parent homes, because you do have that a lot where you'll have a parent that is, especially a parent outside the Lord, he's letting the children do, or vice versa, letting the children do all this bad stuff, and you're trying to rein your children in. So it does make parenting very hard, but that's where you have a Heavenly Father that you just have to rely on and ask him to undo things that are being done, because you can't always change circumstances out there. But God has a way to work through those. You have to let the child know that you're in charge, and do not return evil with evil. And that's what I say. Do not scream, yell, or talk angry with your child. If you need some time away, and there's many times that I would get in a battle with my children, or I'd feel that battle, and I would have to excuse myself and tell them, I need to go spend some time with the Lord right now, because I just need him to direct me, because right now I'm not under his will. I'm not surrendered to him at the moment. So I need to go spend some time. And it's okay. Your children will appreciate the time that you go and spend the time with the Lord, because then you come back speaking sweet to them instead of nice or angry. So they'll appreciate it. Any parent not working for the salvation of your child will reap the negative rewards. Do not give up the greatest joy to see a soul won for Christ. By not battling for and with your child, you're missing the greatest blessing. So there's always sweet victory when we see our children give themselves to Jesus Christ. It is the duty of those who claim to be Christians to present to the world well-ordered, well-disciplined families, families that will show the power of true Christianity. Child Guidance 233. Okay, so to win this battle, I felt I needed a war plan because I'm in a battle. So I need to know the strategy so I can win. And so I need to know that discipline and our foundation. Where do I need to start first? Then I need to understand my standards, my consequences, rewards, whether they be negative or positive. And then I need to know how to deal with rebellion, because rebellion comes up. So those were my plan of attacks. I had to set something in my home that I know was giving me this firm foundation that I could build on. And then, Lord, teach me how to correct and discipline, because I've got to train them. And then teach me what I need to do with rebellion. So those were my child training is very simple. A step here, and a step here, and then we repeat. So it's not really hard when you actually put it into practice. Discipline is discipling your children so they reflect the character of Jesus. Discipline is our foundation. It is what the seminar is about. It's the whole process we go through in raising those godly children. So discipline is actually discipling for obedience. Now, I already showed you, and I didn't do the first one, the very first one, we set up an environment. That's a different talk that I have called Battling for the Heart. And it's setting up the environment where we're teaching our children the spiritual, the physical, the emotions. The physical or the spiritual is the family worships, private devotions, teaching our children how to learn scriptures, doing Bible games, different things that build that spiritual. The physical is our children having to work in the home. There's things that we have to have a smooth operation going. So our kids need to participate with us. We all do the laundry. We all do the cleaning. We all wash windows. We all do the floors. We all work together. Emotions are those bonding times. Your children need you. They want your time. Those are your camping trips. Those are your hiking trips. Those are going to the parks together. Those are family powwows. Those are playing a game night. Those are just time that you're building emotional bonds. They need a friend. So that's the time you get to be a friend with your child. And so those are what those are. So you're setting that emotion first. Within that foundation, you have to set up the training children, educating youth, directing, educating, developing, which we went through the last seminar. So it actually looks like this. So that's your foundation. I covered two of the pieces, not the first piece, but that's my foundation. Now I'm going to build on the standard and the consequences. So once my foundation is set, that continues going, and now I have to really start teaching because bad things are going to happen to my child. So I have to know what to do. And with this step, I prayed and I prayed and I prayed. And I found that, like I said, with standards, a lot of people, when we go to consequences, are only negative. Well, I wanted my children to know that positive things happen too. When you do things that are good, positive things happen to you. So we want to make sure we're setting those up as well. And like I said, they don't have to agree with your standards or how you're disciplining. You're not looking for compliance. You're just looking for obedience, for submission. So a lot of people have punishments, and I didn't. I set up a standard and a consequence. And with every standard, there should be a good and a bad consequence that's going with it. And if your children are under God's control, they will always choose to do what they're supposed to do. And children need to have help in doing this, and we had a thing called family powwow. And family powwow was a time we wanted our children to have a framework where they could talk to us about the standards, because sometimes our standards were not reasonable. But I didn't know that. But when the children start doing them, they become unreasonable to them. And I wanted my children to have a place that they could discuss what was going on so there would be fairness for them. I used to, when my children would wash the dishes and they would have dirty spots on it, I would move all the dishes and I would move them back from the clean side, back to the dirty side, and they had to wash them all again. Well, we always, Thursday nights, we had a family powwow, and then you could call an extra family powwow if you wanted to. Well, the children got together, the girls, and decided to have an extra family powwow. And the purpose of this extra family powwow was to talk about the unfairness of washing all the dishes when only two dishes were dirty. So they wanted to find out, was it possible and would it be okay if they didn't mind doing the dishes again because they knew they weren't clean? Would it be okay if instead of taking all of them and move it over, they could just move the ones that were found dirty and rewash those? And so we thought about it, we talked about it, and we felt like that was very reasonable. We also asked them, is it okay with you too that if we have the majority of them being dirty, then we turn and put them over here? Like if we have maybe 75% of them that are not getting washed, they said that would be fair because now they're getting sloppy in their work. That would be fair. So they were happy, we were happy, and so it was set up. I'm really glad we did that because before I got my glasses, I could not see very well, and there were so many dishes that were dirty, and my kids would find them, putting them away, and they just put them on the other side of the counter for rewashing and find another one, put it on the other side, and I'd say, okay, do I have 75% yet? Or am I under 75%? No, Mom, you're good. You're not over 75% yet. Okay, then I don't have to redo all of them, just a few of them. And then I got glasses, so I didn't have to redo any of them. But we're teaching our children how we have standards and consequences and that they could be a part of this. And as they became more and more righteous, particularly, they could join us in the decision. So when we had something we needed to set up, and I usually didn't set up a standard and a consequence until something was broken and I saw that there was a need here. Because it wasn't like I had a whole list and now I'm going to go through these. There's certain ones I did have as a list. I had to have prompt and perfect obedience. I had to have respect towards us as a family, adults, that type of stuff. Respect to God. No hurting. They couldn't hurt an animal. You can't hurt people. Language. There was no rudeness that was taking place. I had certain standards that I just set. And then other ones didn't come up until we had a rule that was broken. If they brought back the car without gas, now I have to set up a standard. If you're going to drive the car, you've got to put gas in it before it comes home. So now we have a standard that's set up. So I only set up standards if I needed them to set up. Well, when they got older, we would sit together as a family and say, okay, this has just come up. We need to set up a standard. What do you think? And they would tell us, oh, yeah, that's good. That's a good standard. Okay, now I need positive and negative consequence for the standard. They were always more harsh on themselves than what I would have been to get the standard. Sometimes we let it go. We say, okay, that's good. We'll do that. Other times we say, that's really a little bit too intense for punishment. Let's do this instead. But that way they joined us in setting those up because by this time they're righteous children. So we can start letting them participate in what we need to have as our family rules. Standards are defined by God and the parents. Consequences or the effects are defined by the parents and submissive children. That's why I'm saying you can let your children join in on deciding. So there needs to be negative rewards and there needs to be positive rewards. A positive reward are effects for keeping the standard, of course. Negative rewards are the effects from breaking the standard. Now, when I was in my educational class, the psychology class, we learned that just because you apply a negative, what's in your mind is negative, it may be positive to the child. So say you have a child that really likes time alone. And so you decide this child's doing things you don't like, so you're going to start taking away time to be with his friends. So in your mind, that's a negative reward because you like being with people, so you're going to set that, but he doesn't like being with people. So he's going to keep getting in trouble, so he doesn't have to be with people. So all you have is rewarded his bad behavior because he likes being alone. So you have to look, is it changing the child? If it's changing the child, then your negative is working. If it's not changing the child, then you're not giving him the right consequence. So you have to change your consequence according to what you need so that the behavior changes. So you want, and that's the whole thing that we're looking for, is changing behavior. So say the child loves to draw. So I'm going to take some drawing time away every time he's bad, but he likes to draw. So he's not going to continue doing the bad because he enjoys drawing time. So he's going to do things that gives him drawing time. So his behavior is going to change. So that's what we're looking for, is the outcome. Are we seeing changed behavior so we know what to do? So we have a child's response is the cause to the standard. If they like the standard, like making the bed in the morning, then they would do it without complaint or have a positive effect. If they did not want to make their bed, then you're going to see a negative effect. So you're always looking for those effects. Now remember, as we looked at earlier, the will is the deciding power which works the children of men unto obedience to God or unto disobedience. So child is choosing to obey. So when my children were young, I used that word choose a lot. Choose, because I could see a battle going on. So the question is, will my child, it is through the will that sin retains its hold upon us. So will my children choose to follow Jesus or not follow Jesus? So when I'm seeing, like I said, a battle has taken place, so I want my child to go out, they're going to go outside, it's cold out there, I need them to put a coat on, but they don't want to put a coat on because it confines them and they don't feel like they can run as easy, so they don't want to wear their coat, but I know it's too cold not to have a coat, so I'm asking for the coat. The minute I see that hesitation, I say, get your coat on, and I see that hesitation, I'd say, choose. I need you to choose. Because I knew there was a battle taking place. It had not gone anywhere yet. They're not screaming. They're not yelling. They're not stomping. They're not arguing. But I know there's a battle taking place, and I tell them to choose. I have just called for the heart. Now they know, okay, this is a thought. These are my feelings. This is what I need to do with it. And my children can surrender at that time. So that's what I'm using to make that choice. Now, once they got older, they already knew what the laws were in our home. And we just had the standard thing. You make your bed in the morning. It's just when you leave your room and you're going to go about your day, your bed needs to be made. Well, my teenager, for some reason, decided she didn't want to make beds anymore. She just quit. And I thought when I walked in the room, it was a little later in the morning than usual, so I thought it should have been made by now, but I'd wait a little bit, and I went back in. It wasn't done. Well, the rule is the beds need to be made, so I stripped her bed, sheets and all, folded everything nicely and placed it at the bottom of her bed. Didn't say anything, just folded her sheets and her covers, and then I went about my day. At night, when she went in to go to bed, her bed is stripped. So she just throws the covers down, she partially made it that night. So she had it partially made. And then the next morning she left it all messed up, and I went back in and I stripped it again, folded everything nicely, and put it at the end of the bed. That second night she just threw it over herself, and the next morning I went in and did the same thing, folded. This happened for about 3 days, and that morning when she got up, that bed was made, and it's been made ever since. And she just came to see me. The minute she leaves her room, that bed is made. And she's 39. She doesn't have to make that bed, but she's in my home. The rule is you make the bed, but she makes the bed in her home too. So that bed's always made when she leaves the room. Now, I didn't say anything that's called a logical consequence. I remember when the girls were really little, they were about 3 and 4, and they had chores, and they were simple chores. I didn't give them a lot. They could do laundry. They could fold the washcloths and hand towels. That wasn't so hard for them. And they could dust, so they had certain chores. Well, one day, Stacy decided she wasn't going to do chores anymore. And she came to me and she said, I don't want to fold clothes anymore. And I said, okay. Well, I don't want to make my bed anymore either. Okay. Well, I don't want to dust either. So she decided, I'm just going to tell her all the things I don't want to do. So she laid this list out and I said, okay. And then she went to Autumn. She said, Autumn, I just told Mom I don't want to dust, I don't want to do any of the laundry, and I don't want to make my bed. And she said, it's okay. You need to go talk to Mom, too. So here Autumn comes in. Autumn's about 2, maybe 3, little kid. And she goes, I don't want to make my bed either, and I don't want to dust, and I don't want to do this. And she was naming all things she didn't want to do. And I said, okay. I said, well, I tell you what, girls, I need you to come with me. So I went into the kitchen, and I opened up my cabinets, and I said, these are the pots and the pans, and this is the stove, and I'm going to show you how to turn it on. And here in the cabinet, soup, and in the refrigerator is sandwich stuff. So there's bread, and there's lettuce, and there's tomatoes, and here's a knife, and here's the plates. When it's lunchtime, you guys can come in and make your sandwiches. And then I went into the laundry room, and I said, let me show you how to do the laundry. So I was showing them how to use the washing machine and how you load it and turn it on. And then I showed them how to do the dryer. And all day long, I was taking them around the house, showing how to use all the appliances. And I said, because you don't want to help me, and you want to do your own thing, You can do your own cooking, Stacy, and your cleaning. Autumn, you can do your own cooking and your cleaning. Now, your daddy and I will do it together because he's out working for me, so I'm helping daddy and daddy's helping me, so we're going to still be a team. But you guys can do your own thing. And then I turned around and I walked away. And I heard this little voice, Autumn, saying, "Now look what you did. What are we going to do now? I don't know how to cook. I don't know how to cook. Look what you did." And Stacy said, "Well, that's not how I thought it was going to happen." So both of them came walking up to me and said, "Mom, if we changed our mind and we worked together, would you still cook for us and do the laundry if we worked together?" And I said, "Well, I thought it was a great plan. I really liked it. I thought it was working well. You were helping me and I was helping you. I really liked it that way." And they said, "Well, we like it that way too, and that's how we want to do it." So from then on, they never once complained about a chore because the options were just not acceptable to them. That's a logical consequence. I had a mother call, and she said that she had gone to one of my seminars, and she was calling so excited. She said, "I used one of those natural consequences, and oh, miracle. He was 12 or 13. Those teen years just get to where they start questioning a little bit. And she said that after breakfast, we always go in the garden and we work. And he decided he wasn't going to work. And she said, "No problem. The Bible says you don't work, you don't eat. So no problem. You don't work, you don't eat." He said, "That's fine." Now, he just got done with breakfast, so he wasn't hungry. So he didn't work. He went and played. So she put out lunch, and she put out a plate for herself. And he said, "Where's my food?" She said, "The rule is, you don't work, you don't eat. If you'd like to eat, the hoe is out there, and the garden's out there. You can go do your work, and you can come in and eat." Well, it hadn't been that long before he had a meal, so it wasn't so bad. He figured he could wait till supper time, so he went on and played. Then Dad came home, and Dad heard all the things that were going on, so Mom put out two plates, one from Mom and one from Dad. And he said, "Well, what about me? Aren't you going to feed me?" Mom and Dad both said, "You don't work, you don't eat. The hoe's out there, and so's the garden." He went out, and he hoed and worked the garden by himself now because he didn't work with Mom. What would have taken 1 hour took about 2.5 hours, and then he came back in, and he ate. Every morning after that, when they got done with breakfast, guess where he was? In the garden hoeing. Now, is that a natural consequence for a child? So he was doing the work that he needed to do. Okay, so when we're asking our children to choose, will it be the Lord's way or not the Lord's way? And I wanted my children, like I said, to choose righteousness. So that's what we're looking for, not choosing the enemy's ways. Okay, now let's look at, this is ADD, and I'm actually working with children that do not do well with cause to effect. But I have found this to work with even young children. So when I start working with little kids, I'm trying some of the ADD stuff that I use in my practice all the time because it's really helping these children to make good choices. Now, we want to teach a cause to effect. Now, I also know with ADD, they have a hard time with cause to effect. It hasn't been developed. Matter of fact, in consequences, we have a pyramid that when I'm working with ADD, we have a pyramid of concepts. When I work with my autistic children, I have three pyramids that I'm working with. It's concepts that never naturally developed. Most concepts should develop by the time your child's 2 years of age. If it doesn't develop, something's stopping that concept from developing. If it's autism, that's what stopped it. If it's ADHD or ADD, that's what's stopping it. So they're not going through that natural development. So we manually create it. First, we have to give what we call an orientation because they see themselves disoriented. That's why my dyslexic kids can see their letters stand up, walk off the page, and dance on the floor. Of course, they're not doing that, but that's what their mind sees. You can actually teach them how to turn that part of their mind off so they don't see it that way. They see their world in 2D, not 3D. So you can actually train the brain how to do that. It's fascinating work. I love what I do. But you can actually teach them how to do that. So you're orienting them to their real world. So they're seeing things the way they really are. Once you orient them, now you have to build this pyramid. And the first one is change. Something happens something just happens. They're watching change. They observe it. Change is happening all the time. It's a God's law, and it's always change. My body's changing inside in time, and even now, you can see that change as I'm getting older. I'm getting all the wrinkles. So time is changing. But this change has been going on in my body for some time. So there's always change going on. A caterpillar changing into a butterfly, there's change that's going on. It's something we observe. The minute we participate in that change, it becomes a consequence. And consequence means, just slipped my mind, something becoming something else because of something. You're making something happen. So in a consequence, you have a cause and you have an effect. You have a before and after. Because you have a before and after, we have time. ADD kids are not good with time. ADHD, time management is really bad. So we have to teach them how to do time management, short-term, long-term time. Then they don't, that's a sequence of events. So they don't know how to sequence things. So they're not able to make order out of their disorderly room. So we have to teach order. So there's a sequence we're building with clay, and then we're actually having a computer, and we're making a whole computer, and now they're processing through this whole computer. And then they start processing the way you process. So we're just adding all the pieces that have been missing during those crucial years of their life so they're able to make these change. So anyway, they're not having these cause to effect, so they're having trouble. So I got a phone call from a mother. She had her little boy in school. And there's a standard in this school, and that is all children need to keep their clothes on in the classroom. Now, don't you think that's a good standard to have in a classroom? I think it's an excellent standard to have in a classroom. All children need to keep their clothes on in the classroom. Well, this little boy didn't always keep his clothes on in the classroom, and he was going to time out. So he had to sit in the corner for time out. And so I went to work with him to see what was happening and what was going on. And the other standard was if he kept his clothes on, then he could go to story time. So that was how it was all set up. So he could either sit in the corner or go to time out. So the first thing I did is when I talked to him, I said, I need you to clay for me. And we work with modeling clay, and we have to just make something that represents him. And so I said, I need you to tell me right before you went to time out, what happened? So he clayed himself, and he had this clay model and all these pieces of clay sitting on the table. And I said, well, what are those? He said, those are my clothes. And I tell you, when you work with these kids, you got to do everything but not laugh. And sometimes it's like, well, that's really cute. You know, but you can't laugh because this is serious. We've got to work through this. Okay, that's your clothes. Okay. So you want to go to time, to story time. So what is it that you need to do? Keep my clothes on? You tell me if I keep my clothes on, I can go to story time? You mean I can do that? And this is February, he had been in school since September, and he said, well, why didn't they tell me that? Every day he was taking his clothes off, every day. Do you think they told him to put his clothes on and to keep them on? Absolutely. But somehow he didn't get it until he clayed what it looked like. Then I went with him the next day to school, and while we were sitting there, it was almost story time, and he left his clothes on. And he went to story time, and he came back, and he ran back, and he was so excited. He said, they let me go to story time. They let me go to story time. And I said, no, they didn't let you go. There's something you did so you could go to story time. What is it you did? I left my clothes on. I left my clothes on. So now on, every day I leave my clothes on, I get story time. That was the last time he took his clothes off in the classroom, because he got story time. Now, he was 4 years old at the time. This one is one of a story from my ADD child that I had to do. And like I said, we do clay modeling. I don't know how easy it is to see there. But the first one is I don't have a pointer. So the arrow is my child. That's the one that I am working with. So that's my child where the arrow is. So my child is talking to his friend. The next one, the second one, is his friend pushes my child. My client then pushes the child back, and the child falls down and breaks his arm. Now, this happened a year ago when this child came to talk to me. He came. He actually came from an AD. He came for a dyslexic program, and he does have dyslexia. But his ADD was a whole lot worse than his dyslexia. So I told his mom, if we don't touch the ADD first, we're not going to be able to get to the dyslexia. That has to be dealt with first. So that's what we did, is work on that first. Now, he was ADD, not ADHD. He still had focusing issues, but he was very low in his dials, and that's the difference. They're just very low. And he, every time anybody talked to him about this, he always felt like it was his friend's fault that he broke his arm. After all, the friend pushed him, so it was his fault his arm got broken. So I had to get him through an understanding that no, it was not the boy's fault, it was his fault. So what I had to first do is I had him clay himself again, so I had that piece down. And then I had to ask him, is it okay for the boy to be on the ground? And he said, I don't want his arm broken. I said, that's not what I asked you. Is it okay for the boy to be on the ground? Until I got that answer, I wasn't going to go anywhere. He said, I don't want his arm broken. Is it okay for the boy to be on the ground? No, I don't want the boy on the ground. I said, how do you want the boy to look? Standing up. I said, okay, make the boy and stand him up. Now, we're going to see what can you do to keep that boy standing up. So let's look at the first one. Is there anything that happened in this that made that boy not be on the ground? Is there anything that will happen right here? Will the boy be able to stay on the ground right here at this point? And he said, yes, no problem. And I said, okay, what about this one? What is it in the second one? I had him look at the second one up here at the top. I said, what about that one? Is that one okay? And I'm going to back up 1 minute. Is that one okay, the third picture, where you pushed him? Would that have kept the boy standing up? And he started crying. And he cried, and he cried. And his mom was sitting there through the whole thing. They had talked to him for a year about this. And he said, I broke his arm. Up until that time, he never took responsibility for breaking that child's arm. And that's what we have with ADHD. They don't take responsibility. It's always somebody else's fault. They're always blaming somebody else. They're not taking responsibility. And he did not take responsibility. But at that moment, he realized he broke the child's arm. He was so devastated. So I just held his hands and I said, it's okay. If you had known, if you pushed him, he would have fallen. Would you have pushed him? He said, no. I said, I want you to clay what you would have done. So he clayed himself, taking his hands off, and I didn't get the next model. He took a picture of himself walking away. And I said, so next time a boy pushes you, what do? He said, I turn around and I walk the other way. Now, by this time, Mom was crying too, because Mom had tried a whole year to show him it was his fault. Even though he didn't mean to break his arm, the fact is, it was his fault and that he needed to take that responsibility. But from then on, he started taking that responsibility. And so I just have to work with them until they get to the place that they can see what they need to do to make a change in a life. And I have more of these at the end of one that I just recently did for a child. And I asked if I could use his model if I didn't use his name. He told me I could if I didn't use his name. Okay, now, oh, this is another picture that he showed me. Is while I'm working with them, they actually have tools that I give them. One of those tools is called a release. That because they have a lot of anxiety, they have to figure out how to get rid of it. So it's almost, and we do it naturally. You know how you feel that pent-up emotion, you go, and you take care of it, and you just kind of do a sigh, and you get out those emotions. That's what they're doing. It's almost like a volcano. They just take in a big breath, and they just blow it out. That's their release. The other is they set their dial down. By the time a child's mad, their dials are 1 to 10. When you're mad at somebody, your dials are not in 4 and 5, which are normal ranges. All you are about 4 or 5. Some of you are at 3. Some of you are even going to 2. 2 is getting in that la-la land. And then 1, you're asleep. And then you wake up again, and 3 wakes you up where you're trying to get out of bed. 4 and 5, you're acting normal. 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 are more of those high dials. 7 through 10 are outside dials, running dials, those kind of relay races of 10. So we're teaching those dials. So at this time, I said, the minute you feel that anger, your dial has just gone up. It's probably anywhere from 7 to 10. If you don't take care of it at that point, you're going to do something wrong. So at that point, the minute you feel that, do a release that brings your energy down real fast, that anger. They also use it for anger management, so it brings it down real fast. And then set your dial. That way you'll be able to control the situation. And so after that, he was able to control anything that was going on. I worked with one boy that he was, when he would bring his dial up from 6, he would go to a 10 just that fast, and he was constantly getting kicked out of the classroom. So I told him, I want you to put, he wanted an elevator, to think of his dial as an elevator. I said, well, when you go up to that elevator and you get to 6, put a big knob there. In order for you to go over that knob, you're going to have to jump over the knob to go up to 7. That way you're stopping yourself from going up that high energy. And then if you need it, like it's a relay race, go ahead and go up and go run your race. But if you're in a classroom, don't ever go past that knob. He quit getting kicked out of school, so it was working for him. So positive rewards are the effects for keeping the standard. So in this case, if the little boy kept the standard, he got to go to reading time. Some examples of positive, if you can make your bed, you can earn a sticker. You get 4 stickers, I make your bed. Turn off the lights, you can earn play money, and you can buy something, and I have a grab box that I set up for families. You can get something out of the grab box. So I always start teaching a positive reward first, and then we teach a negative reward. Now, this child was leaving toys around, so that's why we set it up. I'm not setting up the negative first, we're setting up the positive. So I want to reward him for good choices first before we do the bad choices. So they learn you can get rewarded. So you're always looking towards the positive. Because as parents, you're always looking towards the negative. What do I have to correct? What do I have to correct? What do I have to correct? Sometimes you get so involved in the negative, you don't even know your kids are good anymore. So you have to start doing positive. What do I see that's good? What do I see that's good? So start enforcing those positive. You'll like your children a whole lot more because you'll find out they really have a lot of beautiful traits that you weren't aware of because you were so busy with the negative. Once you do that, if you have to, then you can go to one of the negatives and set up. So we had a grab box. They could take money out of it. Pick up toys. They could earn points or stickers. Industrious, they finished the job early, they earned free time. If it's a negative one, then they have a negative effect. He had to go in time out. So it can be they make beds, you lose a sticker. So if you lose 2 stickers, you make your bed, plus you have to go make my bed. Not turning off the lights, they paid real money, or they did an extra job. This is one that we actually had. So when I trained, my children were babies in arms. We'd go out the door, their bedroom, and I would take their little hand, and I'd say, turn lights off, and we'd walk out, and then we'd go back in, we'd go out again, turn lights off, and we'd go out, and I just trained them, so I didn't have to use their hand anymore. When I got to the light switch, my children would go like that, and would walk out. They lay low to turn off the lights. Then when they got older, and they didn't turn off the light, and I went back in, then they would go get money out of their money jar or play money right now and pay me back. The play money could be turned in for real things at the end. They paid me for what they didn't do. Pick up the toys. If they didn't pick it up, it went into my toy box, and they could buy it back from me. And so I had a toy box, and when it was time to pick up toys, whatever they didn't pick up went in my toy box. And then if they wanted it back, they had to go do a chore to get it back. And I told them that if it stays in my toy box for a week, it goes to Dorcas. And so every day that they chose not to get those toys out, because it would cost them, they'd have to go do something to get those toys off, I marked off on a calendar. There's a check mark. They didn't do it. There's a check mark. And I always knew. I told them, now watch your calendar, because at this day, and it was circled, when would we be taking that to Dorcas? Well, one day they got too busy, and that day came and went. So the next day I took them to the calendar, and they went, our toys are going to Dorcas? I said, you didn't care about them? So yes, I loaded them in the car, and after that, they always picked up their toys. Now, they also got to where they would pay money to take toys to Dorcas, too, because they didn't mind giving to Dorcas, but that was just a shock to them that they were losing their toys, because that's not what they wanted. They wanted to keep their toys, so they learned to pick up their toys. Lazy, if they're not finished a chore early enough, then they had to do an extra chore. I had one daughter that get in the shower, and she just showered forever and forever and forever. I had one parent that would just turn off the hot water. That took care of it real fast. Those kids were out of that shower. We gave her a minute. Every minute past this allotted time, you could pay us a quarter. It only took 1 quarter for her to learn to turn off that shower. Examples of responsibility. I didn't mean to. They break something. It's an accident. They have to clean up the mess, help fix it, pay for it, either money or a chore. We went out shopping, and Stacy was always very careful because I felt like you have to be careful with merchandise, as I was sharing earlier with Danny. So anyway, we went out to the store, and she ripped a card by accident. She didn't mean to, and she came to me and told me about it. And I said, well, you need to go tell the lady, and when you get home, I'll pay for the lady now, but when we get home, you can pay me. So she went up to the lady, and she apologized and told her she didn't mean to. She was looking at her card, and what happened is the card actually opened the opposite way from what cards open. It opened this way, so she kept trying to force it open because all cards open that way, and that's why she ripped it, because she didn't know it went the other way. But even so, she did rip it. And so she told the lady she was sorry, and she gave her money. She said, this is my... Well, first of all, she didn't even want to go talk to the lady because she was so scared. It's really hard to imagine now because she's so outgoing, but she was so shy. She said, no, Mommy, you go do it. And I said, I'm not going to do it. You're the one that broke the card. But I didn't mean to. I said, no, you didn't mean to. You're not getting in trouble because you mean to, but the fact is you broke it. You got to go tell her. She said, Mommy, I'll pay you double when I get home. I'll do some more jobs. I can't go talk to that lady. I said, you have to go talk to the lady. You did it. And she turned to Autumn. She said, Autumn, I'll pay you to go talk to the lady. And I said, no, Autumn's not going to go talk to the lady either. You got to go talk to that lady. So anyway, she went up shaking. She told the lady what had happened. And she said, I'm really sorry. I thought the card opened the other way, and I forced it, and I ripped it. That I have to pay for it when I get home with my money to my mom, but my mom gave me the money to pay you. So here's your money, and I'm so sorry. Will this take care of it? The lady just dropped her mouth and said, I have cards ripped every day in the store, and I've never had one person come in and apologize for ripping my cards. I don't want to keep your money. I just thank you for your honesty. And that was a lesson in itself. It pays to be honest. So she didn't even have to pay for the card. And she was learning how to get over her shyness, too. Okay, so we have the child's will, so we have a negative effect, and we have a positive effect. The next one that we have, and we always, like I said, the word choose. So now I have my foundation, I have a battle going on, and I use the word choose so my girls can make a choice. Do they want to follow God, or do they not want to? What is their choice? And you're never going to see a child rebel when you give them a positive consequence. It's when you have to meter out that negative consequence that you're going to see rebellion. So I needed to set up something in place to deal with rebellion. So in my studies, as I was studying, I used spankings. I used my hand. My husband used the belt. And I did not see these were biblical. So when I started praying, I said, I still need to deal with rebellion. Show me what to use. And this is when I came across the rod. The rod is not the same thing that you use when you use a spanking, so I'm going to try to go through it. The rod is actually used, Aaron's rod, for authority, justice. The shepherd's rod was for protection and mercy. And so the rod is what was used. And like I told you, when Danny first came into our home, I took him into the kitchen and I showed him this rod. And I said, if you need this rod, you're going to bring it to me and you're going to have me use it on you. And that's when Danny said, I'm never going to do that. I'm never going to go get that thing. And the first day that he lied to me, we sat down and I talked about his little heart and how he was lying. And I said, Danny, now's that time that you knew what was right and you've chose to be disobedient in this, and I need to use that rod. But I'm going to go pray, and I'm going to talk to the Lord. And while I'm in there praying, I want you to talk to Jesus too. And so when I came in, he said, I'm ready. I'm ready for the rod. And I said, okay, well, you know where I keep it. So he went and got it, brought it to me, and I used it. And that mom called that night, and she said, how did Danny do? And I said, well, today was the first day he had to use the rod. And she said, oh, I'm so sorry. He screamed and yelled and ran around the room. That's what he did with mom. I said, no. He said, I deserve this. I'll go get it and bring it to you. She said, when I get home, do you think you and I could sit down and talk about this child training stuff? Because he's never done that with me. Even at the end of the 8 weeks, I was in my room making the bed, cleaning everything up, and Danny walks into my room, and he has a rod in his hand. And he said, you have told me to do something, and I have not been doing it. I have been disobeying you. And so I want you to know I need the rod. I didn't even know he did anything. And I said, well, what is it that you've been doing that I didn't know? And he told me. He said, you've asked me, and I've been sneaky, and I've been doing it. But this morning in my devotions, Jesus told me that I have sinned. And I don't want Jesus to pay the price. I want to pay the price for my sin. So here's the rod. So I took the rod, and I laid him over, and I went to use it. And the first thing he said is, don't give me an easy one. I deserve this. And I said, okay. So I gave him the standard rod that I give, and I just gave it one time. And he kept saying, I'm not going to cry. I'm not going to cry. I'm not going to cry. And then I was crying, and he was crying, and I turned him around, and then he goes, it's okay. It's okay. I deserve this. It's okay. You did good. He was letting me know this was a good thing. It was okay. How many children do you discipline that they go, hey, Mom and Dad, I think this is great. You did a good job here. We don't see that very often, but you do from a surrendered heart. Even when God corrects you and you don't like it, but you learn from it, you say, thank you, Lord. That was a good thing. It was hard, but it was a good thing. Thank you for taking me through that lesson. And that's what Danny did. He said it was a good thing. So it was okay for me to correct him. My daughter, it was time for her to take a discipline. And she just would not. She said, I know I've done wrong. I need this. And we were at it like 3 or 4 hours. And she said, I know I need this. But I do not want to take my discipline. So I went to the Lord and I said, I don't know what to do. She knows. It's time, but she doesn't want it. I don't know what to do. And then the Lord told me, you take it for her. And so I took it, and I said, daughter, here's the rod. Because you won't take it, and there's a punishment that needs to be met here, I'm going to take it for you. Her eyes just bugged out, and she said, no way. No way. All my life I've learned to respect you. I am not doing this. I will take 10 of these. I am not doing that. And I said, every time you argue with me, you're going to give me one more. Now you're at 2. She said, Mommy, I can't. And I said, you refuse to take it. She said, I'll take them. I'll take them. I said, no, it's too late. You have to give me 2. If you keep arguing, you're going to be 3. She argued a little more. I had 3. I said, are you ready to go to 4? She said, I can't even do the 3. I'm done. I don't want to argue. So I bent over, and she took the rod, and she goes, barely tapped me. I said, no, I need to feel it. Oh, Mama, please. I said, yep, I got to feel it. She goes, oh, she's screaming and crying, not because she was getting it, because she was giving it to me. And then she threw it down, and she hugged me, and she said, never again will I not take my punishment. Because I can't do this. It was my sin. You didn't have to pay it. And I said, that's what Calvary's cross was like. It was your sin, but Jesus paid it. That's exactly what that was like. Well, my mother, there was a mother listened to my child training tapes. She called me up, and she said, that doesn't work. I tried that with my son, and he loved giving me the rod. He thought that was the best thing ever. And I said, why did you do it? Well, because I listened to it on your tape. And I said, did God tell you to do that? I said, no. And I said, well, then you don't do anything just because I tell you. This is called a relationship. God knew the son's heart. That son was not ready to go there. If he had, he would have been surrendered. But he wasn't. And so all you did was enforce a negative issue. So if God doesn't tell you to do it, don't do it. That's why I say it's relationship. Just a principle. But it's a relationship. So you've got to know from the Lord whether you should do something. Now, we want eternal life for them, so disobedient children will not enter God's kingdoms. So it takes time to implement discipline, and it takes time to implement correct discipline. But a child that respects his father will respect their mother, and he becomes a teen that respects his wife. And like I said, not too long ago, I asked a father, where did your son feel like it's okay to hit his mother? So do you realize you are setting up a standard in your home that not only is it okay to go against authority, but it's okay for a man to be abusive to a woman? I'm sensitive to this because I lived through it. There is never a time that it's okay for a man to be abusive to a woman. You are training your son wrong. You need to make a correction here. He said, well, I hadn't thought of it like that. Chastisement, rod of correction. Those who spare the rod of discipline hate their children. Proverbs 13:24. Chastise thy son while there is hope, and let not thy soul spare for his crying. There will be a time when it's too late to correct your child. Now, I remember a parent reading this and thinking, oh, good, okay, I can use the rod. And I said, that's no better than a spanking. That's no better than a belt. That's not what these scriptures say. There's a correct way and a wrong way to use the rod. So a child raised with the rod and reproof give wisdom. A child raised without the rod, but a child left to himself bringeth his mother to shame. Proverbs 29:15. Using the rod will stop rebellion, it brings submission, it reestablishes God's authority and parental authority, and it yields the peaceful fruit of righteousness. Now, no chastening seems to be joyful for the present, but painful. Nevertheless, afterwards, it yields the peaceable fruit of righteousness to those who have been trained by it. Hebrews 12:11. When to use? I used it for hurting children, hurting animals, tell-bearing, because tell-bearers grow up to be gossipers. Gossipers destroy your church faster than anything else. So we stop tell-bearing and rebellion. Rebellion happens when obedience is not carried out promptly, perfectly, cheerfully, and willingly. There's three types of rebellion. There's active, passive, and creative disobedience. Active rebellion usually is taken care of because the parent sees it right away. They say no, they hit you, they argue, they don't care, they go against your directions, they don't listen, they walk away while you're talking to them, they're continuously ignoring instructions, they get mad. Passive is a little bit harder to see because it's kind of quiet, it's internal resentment, but you see the countenance. They clam up, they stare at you, they ignore you, they have a sour countenance, they're stubborn. They're melancholy, they pout, they withdraw, they do it with a bad attitude, they roll their eyes. Creative rebellion or disobedience looks like this. I walked in my child's room one day, and I always wanted them to sit up when they did their devotion time because I felt like it was better on their eyes. And so I walked in the room, and I asked her to sit up, and she propped herself up on her elbows. And I told her, you can be creative when you do art. You can be creative in your science projects, but you may not be creative in your obedience. Do you know the difference between sitting up and prompting yourself up on your elbows? Do you know? And she said, yes. I said, so are you giving me obedience or disobedience? She said, disobedience. I said, do you want to continue giving me disobedience or obedience? I would like to give you obedience. Okay. I waited. She sat up. So children are told to look at you, and so you have their face up, and they're looking this way, and they're looking that way, and they're not looking at you. That's called creative disobedience. That's not acceptable. I was doing a parenting seminar. It wasn't a parenting seminar. It was a youth program, and I had all these youth came in, and there was a lot of kids there. And I had these ones, and they came up, and they would always sit in the front row, and everyone would be sitting. And this front row would slouch down, and they had a real cool way of doing it. They kind of sat like this, and then they just kind of slide back, and then this is how they were sitting. And the minute they slide, the whole team back there just slid right down. And I thought, oh, these are my leaders right here. So I asked them to sit up. And so they kind of inched up a little bit. So I asked somebody if they would take my class for a moment. And I took these ones, and I said, well, don't you guys come with me a moment outside? So they stepped outside the room, and there's some chairs out there. I said, I am really sorry. Obviously, I asked you to do something that you don't know what I'm asking you to do. So I am really sorry. It's my fault. I should have explained. So I'm going to try to show you what sit up means, because I assume you don't know. So when you sit up and you're laying down like this, when I tell you to sit up, this is what it looks like. See? It's really not that hard. So I'd like you each to try it. So I let each of them sit down. And I said, oh, that's good, good, very good. Well, how about you? You try it. Good, you got it. What about you? You got it. Oh, you guys are good. You got it. Then I went back, and the next day when they came in, they all went down, slid down. All the kids slid down. And I said, sit up, please. And these ones popped up, and then the rows pop, 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 and they all set up. The next time they came in, I didn't have to ask them anymore. Now, it may have been a little humiliating to them, but I assume they didn't know because they didn't obey me. But from then on, they did obey. They did exactly what I asked them to do. When they set up, they set up. That's called creative disobedience. So creative disobedience is not obedience. For rebellion, it's active. It says, for rebellion is as the sin of witchcraft, and stubbornness is as iniquity and idolatry. And I put in there active rebellion and passiveness, because you'll see the both. 1 Samuel 15:23. So now we have the whole thing. We have how to set up our foundation. We have how to make standards, and then how to stop rebellion and teach a child how to surrender. So what does dealing with standards and consequence and rebellion really look like? And we're getting towards the end, because I know you're probably very tired. So with setting any standard, making the bed, picking up toys, washing dishes, I'm looking for one thing: prompt, perfect, willing obedience. I want a sweet countenance when they're doing it. Before a child is responsible for the standard, make sure they know how to master it. So I always had them first training. So the training the child to pick up their toys. I show them by example what it looks like. Then I practice with them, and then I let them do it, and I watch them. Once I know they mastered it, now the standard is set, and now they can pick up their toys. And then we go and we do the same thing. We're going to practice a positive reward. They can earn money, or they can practice a negative reward. And I always do the practice first. So whenever I'm setting a standard, I spend a week teaching what it's positively going to look like. So we go in, we pick up our toys, and now you go and you get a sticker. You go pick up your toys, now you go get a sticker. You go pick up your toys, now you get a sticker. Okay, now you have 5 stickers. Now it's time to go and turn those stickers in. So now we're going to go to my grab box, and you can turn in your stickers and get something out of my grab box. So we practice it. And then we practice what the negative looks like. You don't pick it up, it goes in my toy box. You don't pick it up, it goes in my toy box. And I keep doing this until the standard is set and they know what to do. I'm going to go past this one. So now we have the standard clean up the room consequence. Anything left on the floor, you buy it back from me. And like I said, we practice it until we have it. I do not remind them. I don't go pick it up for them. And this is when, if they've done a standard, and I have my chart set up, and for families, I actually set up charts, that when I see something, the kids just go right to the chart, see what the consequence is, and then they go back and do the consequence. So the chart's right there telling everything they need to do, but we've already practiced everything first. So I never require them to do it until we first practice it all the way through. I'm going to jump through some of these. I'm trying to find my mouse here. Because of time, I'm going to skip. As long as you're restating your standards every day, you're not going to ever see character development. So what's going to bring the character development is you have a standard and a consequence, a standard and a consequence. And you never change your standard. Those stay the same. The only thing that's going to make a difference is to meter out the consequence. So if there's something broken, if it's good, you reward positive. If it's bad, you reward negatively. Once it's down and it's the system all the time, you can take away the positive, and the only time you're going to implement again will only be negative, because that time they've already been doing it and just something happened. A fluke came up. They decided not to do it, like my daughter not making her bed. I just folded it. I didn't go back over again what was the requirement when she was little. I just made her bed until she realized the bed needs to be made, and she started making it. So once you get to that point, you've already set up the standard, so you only have a negative afterwards. I'm going to pass through these. Okay, so you call for that, and this is how I actually use a rod. So I have a child that has chosen not to do the positive or the negative consequence. So you're not going to see it a positive consequence, only with the negative. So my child has chosen not to. So what I do with the rod is I'm only going to use it one time. So I'm going to call for the heart. Johnny, Jesus isn't in your heart. We're going to pray. I've asked you to do something, and you've chosen not to do it. So now I need to use the rod. So I pray first, I turn the child over, and I use a dowel stick. Actually, I'm not using the round part of the spoon, I'm actually using the stick. And the reason I'm using a stick, I used a very skinny one for my children when they were little. And parents did this long time ago. You know when the parents used to go out and get a willow stick? They were thin, but one blow, and it was sharp enough, it hurt. When they got older, they used a hickory stick because it was firmer. So parents knew this a long time ago. But I use it one time. So I pick the size according to the size, age of the child. I'm going to use it once. The rod is not because I'm mad. I'm not angry. If I am, I don't even go there. So my child has chosen to be rebellious. I have out-and-out rebellion. I tell them, because of your rebellion, you have refused to do what I've asked you to do. In this case, I was using a story of the little boy not picking up his cap, and he refuses to do it. So now you're going to need the rod of correction. So I pray, I turn the child over, and I give one sting of the rod. The reason why spankings don't work is, one, when a child kind of tights up, the blow of the spanking does not hurt as bad. But if they, well, let me think, I may have had that opposite. Let me think how this works. So when you're giving a rod, if a child submits under the rod, it doesn't hurt. If they tighten, it hurts. But if they submit under it, it doesn't. And it's just one sting. Also, whoever uses it, it's the same force. A dad spanking and a mom spanking is not the same. It doesn't feel the same. And so it's just one sting. And then I turn the child over and I pray again. Your heart's in rebellion. I need you to surrender. You still have a negative consequence you have to do, but I need your heart. Are you ready to give your heart to Jesus and do what I've asked you to do? If they're surrendered, they say yes. And they go do what they're supposed to do. If they're not surrendered, they will scream, yell, whatever they do. And I say, I'm sorry that that's your choice. The way of the transgressor is hard. I turn them over, and I give one more. I turn them back, and I'm asking again for the heart. Are you ready to surrender now to Jesus? I'm not mad. I'm not angry. Usually I was crying by this time because the enemy had my child's heart, and I was asking for that heart back. Are you ready to surrender now? If the heart was ready, they would say yes, and they'll go do what they have to do. If they say yeah, and they walk off, I know they're not ready. If the attitude is not right, I know they're not ready. I need a surrendered heart. The minute the heart's surrendered, they will hug me and tell me, thank you for working with my heart. And then they'll go off and do what they want to do. Spankings never accomplish redemption. And I will be honest, if you train your children right, I probably used the rod 5 times in their life, even that. I did not have to use it because they knew I would, and they didn't. There was no reason for them going there. The negative and the positive consequences was enough for them to make those choices. But it is a choice that you may have to do as you're walking through this. I'm just saying, if I need any of these. Okay, this is just, again, calling for the heart. So we're at the very end. So we're actually calling for the heart. I was working with in our church, and this mother wanted to join the choir, and she had a little boy that just was not going to let her join. And she asked me if I would work with Michael. And I never take a child the mother doesn't give me permission. And so she knew my child training. She was okay with everything that I did. So I took Michael. And I went in the other room, and Michael was just screaming and yelling, and I told him that he needed to make some choices here. I needed him to surrender his heart. Mom needed to do this choir practice, and he needed to sit quietly with me. And that he started just screaming, and I said, Michael, I'm going to have to use the rod. You're not submitting. All I'm seeing is rebellion in your heart. He was around 3, I would say, 2 or 3. I said, he was old enough to understand what I was saying, so he must have been around 3, but even 2-year-olds work. But anyway, so I was kept talking to him, calling for his heart. Anyway, I had to turn him over, and I used the rod once, and I turned him back, and I said, Michael, I still need you to surrender. So, and I know the rod hurts, and I don't want to use this. This is a method just to bring you to surrender. But I need you to stay with me until Mom's ready. But I need you to stop crying and just work with me. Anyway, I had to give 2, and when I was done, I asked him, I said, Michael, are you ready now? And he nodded his head, he was ready. So we started walking to the church, and I said, now what I'm going to do is we're just going to look in the window first because you need to see your mom, and we can't go in yet because you've got to be okay with looking in that window. I want you to know I'm not keeping you away from your mommy. You're going to have her. As soon as she gets done, you're going to go with your mommy. But I just need you to wait until she's done singing, okay? So I want you to look in the window. So he looked in the window, and he was going, trying real hard, trying to be quiet, not cry. And I said, okay, are you ready to try going in? Are you ready? And I said, I need you to choose, Michael. You need to choose. It's going to be okay. We can do this, okay? You ready? Choose. So I opened the door, and he was crying again, trying to hold it back. I said, choose, Michael, you're doing good. Choose, just keep doing it. You're doing good. Jesus is with you. He's helping you. We're going to do this. And so I kept talking to him, and he kept trying. And we sat down, and we were getting closer to Mama now because we were sitting in the first pew, and Mama's right here, so he was really close to Mama, so it was getting a little harder. And he was trying, holding his mouth. I said, choose, Michael, you're doing so good. Jesus is so proud of you. You're letting him work in your heart. You're doing really well, Michael. Just keep choosing. You're making good choices right now. You're going to have Mommy after it's all done. And then I felt him, and he just relaxed. There was no more tension. There was no more crying. There was nothing going on. Total surrender. He sat there and watched Mama for a little bit, and then he fell asleep. And then Mom got all done. He was still sleeping. I said, let me be the one to take him to you. So she went in, had the refreshments, and when we were all done, he woke up. And I said, Michael, let's pray. You chose to be obedient. You didn't have to. You could have screamed and yelled again, but you chose to. That's a victory. We're going to thank Jesus for your victory because that was a good choice. And after we have prayer, we'll go find your mom. So we had prayer. We went to go find Mom. And the minute he saw her, he started going, and I said, Michael, you had such a victory. Don't give up your victory in Jesus. And then he smiled, and then he was fine. So he was able to walk through the process too. So it's just a matter of teaching any child how to surrender the heart. You have brought children into the world who have had no voice in regard to their existence. You have made yourself responsible in a great measure for their future happiness, their eternal well-being. The burden is upon you, whether you are sensible of it or not, to train these children for God, to watch with jealous care the first approach of the wily foe, and be prepared to raise a standard against them. That's why we say choose. We see the battle going on, and we're asking our child to choose. Build a fortification of prayer and faith about your children, and exercise diligent watching thereunto. You are not secure a moment against the attacks of Satan. You have no time to rest from watchful, earnest labor. You should not sleep a moment at your post. This is a most important warfare. Eternal consequences are involved. It is life or death with you and your family. Child Guidance 185. That's it. I do want to show you, and we'll have some questions and answers, and then we will stop. This is a picture of one of the ADD boy I just did. I'm going to walk through what has happened here and what we had to clay. The top one over here is him with some friends. He's in the white, so we could distinguish what he was. So he's talking with his friends. This was a Sabbath afternoon, the week before. So he was with me 2 weeks, and this happened on Sabbath. We had just finished 1 week, and then he came back Monday, and we were claying. I asked him if there was anything negative happening this weekend that we could clay. And he said, yeah, I got in trouble. And I said, okay, let's go through what you got in trouble for. So he had his friends, and then his friends and him were talking, and he's right down by the question mark, and that arrow that's going up like this, they saw a person up on a cliff. And over on the third picture, there is actually it's a bridge is what it is. And in the bridge, there's a little cropping in there, and there was a hammock in there. And they knew there was a person in that hammock. And so the boys right before that were talking about who possibly could get in the hammock. Now this little boy said, well, the person in that hammock probably was doing something they shouldn't do. And so therefore, he needed to get that person out of there. So he started throwing rocks up at that person. An adult, of course, came by and said to stop that. And so I had him clay, what could have happened? Why would an adult even ask you to stop? What could have happened? So he showed the person over here, he's in the white, and that other person is actually laying down, and that's a rock on top of him. that the rock hit him and knocked the person down. So that is a rock sitting on top of that one. And I said, okay, so are you okay with that, that you hurt somebody? And he said, well, no. And I said, okay, well, what do you want it to look like? He said, well, I want the guy to be standing up and not hurt. I said, okay, so play that. So that's what that is over here. On the far right-hand side, he's standing up and the person's okay. I said, now let's go back from the very beginning. We want to keep this man standing. So you're still with your friends. Is there anything problem with that? Nope, that was good. Okay, what about the second one here when you guys are discussing about the man up in the rock? Are you okay? Is that okay? Is there any problems there? And he said, no, because we were just questioning about it. And I said, okay, what about when the third picture on the top, when you started throwing the rocks? What about that? Well, first of all, did that second picture, did it affect him standing up? No, because we were just talking. Okay, now what about when you were...